wise man once said, once told me, actually, that people love lists. So we're back with another list at Baseball Prospectus, our mid-season top 50 update. I'm the lead prospect writer at Baseball Prospectus, Jeffrey Paternostro. With me on the line is the author of that now infamous quote in my mind, our minor league editor, Craig Goldstein. Craig, how's it going?
It's going well, and I stand by it.
People do love their lists, and lists we shall give them. I do sort of want to preface this with our midseason 50 tends to be a little fuzzier than our 101.
Yep.
Because, you know, there's guys eligible for this that will be eligible for our offseason 101 that aren't eligible for this. There's guys going on and off because of our framework. There's always a guy that comes on or off like the day I'm finalizing things. This year it was Willy Adames. Congratulations, Willy Adames, for being on our midseason top 50. We only include currently prospect eligible players in the minors that were not 2018 draftees or July 2nd signings. So it's not even like a sort of complete picture of the prospect landscape at this point. It's more sort of like, in some ways, it's more of a stock watch.
It really, when we say like an update, it's an update of the 101 because right. It's not taking those new people into account.
And it's also not like I don't tear this up and start from scratch. If I ranked right. you, you know, 27 preseason, I'm out, you know, absent. And there are big risers and there are some big fallers, and we can get into yep. those later. But, you know, absent a huge ton of evidence one way or the other, I tend to be fairly conservative in how much I'm going to move you in one direction or the other. Like, obviously, there's guys that graduate, so that moves the list here and there, too. But just sort of on a pure talent. And guys change. It's not like we're sitting here on July 12th as we record this. And, like, guys have certainly changed. There are guys whose stock are up. And there are guys whose stock are, like, completely yeah. different prospects that aren't in the top 50.
Yeah. But it's very much about what they've done and the people around them have done that moves them up and down as yeah, opposed yeah. to, like you said, starting from scratch and just saying, who do I like more mm-hmm. necessarily? I mean, we take that into account, but...
So
yeah,
I use
it's a reflection of the 101 and what people have done since then more than anything, I think.
I'll use one of my sort of personal concerns, one of my favorite prospects, Francisco Mejia, is an example of this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is less of an issue now because he hit like 450 in June, but my chat queue was, you know, for most of April and May, filled with questions about what the fuck is going on with Francisco Mejia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like,
we said that to each other too.
Yeah, it's like, well, I don't have a good answer for that. And like, I'm glad I don't have to do like a May 1st prospect update because I didn't have the information.
Yeah.
Like, it takes time to sort of suss this all out and see as many guys as you can and get as many reports from the team and from external sources as you can. And now it's like, he looks like what you would expect Francisco Mejia's line to look like in AAA, more or less.
Yeah.
You know, and he's down yeah. a little, and he's down a little bit because he's playing more outfield and stuff like that. But it's not, you know, as big a concern. I'm not going to do wild swings with him just because he had a bad couple of months. Now, if there were reports that supported that, you know, something in the underlying skill set, but I didn't have those. Like
yeah.
it was mostly just us trying to puzzle out. Like I don't know why he's hitting or not hitting. So he said, so I think he dropped from like 4 to 8, which is fine. It's even a little bit of a bigger drop than that when you consider that most of the players, or several of the players ahead of him graduated. So.
Yeah, well, and also, I mean, we can get into it, but obviously we talk a lot about Juan Soto, but like Juan Soto was behind him, but then also graduated.
Sure.
But he would have been ahead of him.
Juan Soto would have been one on this list, if anyone's wondering.
Right.
And we love Vlad Jr. And
sure.
I know our good friend Jarrett Seidler, I think, said at some point in May that, like, even if Vladimir Guerrero Jr. suffered, like, a non-career-changing but season-ending injury, he'd still be one. And he sort of did. I think he'll probably be back at some point. But you know, he's going to miss a large chunk of the season with a knee injury. He's still at number one. I mean, the difference is, I think, if Vladimir Guerrero had been called up in May, like, he probably should have been. like your expectation for what he would have done, like the good, like he could have absolutely come up and done what Juan Soto has done so far in the majors. But Juan Soto did it, and he didn't, so.
Yeah, I mean, that, and that's the difference. And, you know, if you want to get into it, like, Juan Soto is a left fielder versus, what, you know, either a bad third baseman or a first baseman. But yeah, there's something to be said, and you know, Jeff and I got into this about some guys who are who just became eligible today. But you know, there's something to be said for guys who have shown you what they can do at the top level.
That's ultimately
that does matter. I downplayed it to Jeff, but you did, yes. But it does matter.
Ultimately, we're trying to project major league performance, and like the best indicator of future major league performance is probably current major league performance, and. That's one of the reasons we don't rank guys that are in the majors at this point. And I, you know, functionally speaking, Kyle Tucker has like 15 major league at-bats, and it's entirely possible he'll be on our 2019 preseason 101. It just, I don't know why we do it that way. It's so something I sort of inherited. I have no strong feelings one way or the other about it, but it becomes fuzzier because like, I think Soto's over 130 at-bats now, but like, I feel like you get a better feel for these players more quickly in the majors because that's really where the rubber meets the road. So yep. Once you're comparing a guy with 100 at-bats that's still prospect eligible to a guy with 10 at-bats, it just, I think, makes the whole process a little more complicated.
Yeah, Soto has 160 at-bats.
Yeah, I thought he was. Him and Acuna, I think, are both no longer eligible even on our at-bat standard.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you have to make a decision somewhere. You know, like if you include, I mean, we faced this with Dansby Swanson that one year in the offseason. We're going to have the Alex Reyes situation.
I'm fucking thrilled about that, yes.
Yeah. But, you know, at some level, like you're just making an arbitrary, it is arbitrary, right? Yeah. Like the thresholds themselves are arbitrary. So, yeah. Like, if a guy has 131 at bats as opposed to 130 and you know, one guy is eligible and one guy isn't, like, you know, it's all just an arbitrary decision. So we've made this decision that to include guys who are only in the minors, because I think a lot of times too, like by midseason, if a lot of guys, when they're called up, are likely to stay up. I mean, guys like Kyle Tucker, we're kind of expecting them to stay up. And
yeah,
so
we're on the other side of the Super 2 deadline now. And
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it's, I mean, look, if you want to ask someone, if you want to ask about someone in the comments, go ahead. You know, we'll address the range that they fall in.
Yeah. So let's look at the list itself. And I do want to start with sort of those pre-stated outliers, because I don't think anyone's surprised that Vlad's one, that, you know, Fernando Tatis is two, or that Eloy Jimenez is still in the top five. I think the two biggest risers for us, both in sort of a numbers level and sort of an absolute projection level, are 3 and 5, which is Joe Adell and Keston Hiura.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with Hiura, I'll actually start with Hiura, who's fifth.
Yeah.
I think we sort of almost baked in this expectation to his preseason ranking.
Yeah.
He just needs to prove he's healthy, he needs to go out and hit, and he's done both.
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing with, like, we talk about trying to avoid small sample stuff, and I think Mejia was a really good example of that, right? Like, it was 2 months, and that is concerning, but, like, that happens.
Here it was, like, 10 days. So,
here it was 10 days, but we also definitely have biases and fall prey to, like, the idea that we think to ourselves, if he does X, Y, and Z, like, I'm all in at that point.
Yeah.
And that's what we did with Hiura. It was like, is he going to play second base? Is he going to look moderately okay doing it? Okay, he is? Then let's go.
Yeah.
And that can get you in trouble. But again, I think...
But he was also, like, nobody before the draft last year, like, didn't think he was the best hitter in the draft.
Correct.
Like, he may not have had the highest upside on a tools level, and we ranked Joe Adell ahead of him. But, like, as far as, like college hit tool, whatever you want to call it, go. Like, everyone thought he goes, like, this is, if you wanted to bet on one guy's hit tool in the entire 2017 draft class, was going to be Keston Hiura. And the only way he fell, the only reason he fell to 9, I think, was even a little bit underslot there, is because, you know, nobody knew if he could actually play second base. But now he's essentially been a full-time second baseman in Double A.
Yeah, I mean, and go ahead.
It's otherwise exactly what you want. Like, he looks like a dude that's going to hit 300 with moderate power and get on base and play a competent second base. And
yeah,
could be in the Brewers lineup by the trade deadline.
Yeah, I mean, one way to think of it is, like, we were, I think everyone was pretty aggressively into Willie Calhoun's bat prior to this season, right?
Right, yeah. So
if Willie Calhoun could all of a sudden play a passable second base,
he'd be a top five prospect in baseball. We said that about him last year, I think, too.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, so that's kind of what this is. Like you said, like, it's just, it's, he's a hitter. He's going to hit. And I mean, as bad as Calhoun has been, and we can get to him later, but he's starting to, you know, get into more like old Willie Calhoun. So, yeah, I mean, this is just a pure hitter, and he doesn't have to be good in the field. And no. he can be, you know, fringy at second base, and he's still going to be, you know, I mean, what it, this is probably too far, but, you know, Daniel Murphy was a bad second baseman who could hit the hell out of the ball, and it was incredible.
That's like 300 with 20 home runs is totally within the realm of possibility
right.
here.
Right, but Murphy was going like 340 with 25, yeah, sure. So it's not quite that, but you get the idea.
And as far as Joe Adell goes, I mean, look, if internally at Baseball Prospectus we have a bias, it's toolsy center fielders.
It is.
And it is. This is loud.
Yeah, this is, if I can borrow a term from our predecessor, Jason Parks, it's abnormal.
It's just, dude's slugging like 650, he's 19.
Yeah.
I know some of that's at the Cal League, but it's like, and we don't scout the stat line, ladies and gentlemen. No,
but like, he slugged 611 in low A, in the Midwest League, which is not the easy, like in April and May in the Midwest League, not the easiest time to hit.
And inland's in, not like an extreme a, hitter's park by Cal League.
No, it's one of the more modern ones, yeah. And so he's slugging higher at, you know, he's slugged higher at low A than he is in the Cal League. I mean, it's the production is insane, but also the reports are equally frothy.
He's 19 and he has 44 extra base hits in 70 games.
And this is the other thing, like, okay, so you take in the, you say, like, oh, it's the Cal League, you know, that knock a few off or whatever. But the thing is, like, you get reports on, like, the exit velocity, and it is 119 miles per hour.
It's like,
that doesn't matter. I don't care if you're in the Cal League. It doesn't matter. And it's not always on the ground, I should point out. Like,
It's a negative launch, the Eric Hosmer negative launch angle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I mean, he's just, the big question on him, and look, here's the other part, right? Like,
this is a corollary to Hiura as well.
Yeah, well, and it's pedigree, right? Like,
well, no, because he came out of high school last year with an arm issue, and nobody knew if he could throw, he was DHing.
That's right, but before that, I mean, this is the other thing, before that, he was also, what, over 90 miles per hour off the mound. Some people liked him as a pitching prospect early in his draft season, so once that came back, you can buy right into it. And beyond that, I mean, and that was the other thing. Like, is he going to be limited to left field? What's he going to be like in center? All the reports say he's going to be fine in center. His arm is back. I mean, what? So people are going to look at this, and admittedly, like, it's aggressive on Adell. But the flip side of that is, what's aggressive?
Yeah.
He's got everything. Why is this aggressive?
I mean, if you think this is, like, right, there's an argument for him at one.
Yeah. I mean, Vlad is a
yeah. I know, and Vlad's,
but, you know,
Vlad.
We had these. I think we had this discussion in May when we thought there's a chance Vlad might make the majors.
Right. And I wanted to write a whole article about, like, who's number one, because Vlad and Soto were both going to be up, and then the Blue Jays were the Blue Jays, and here we are.
Exactly. But, you know, once you get past Vlad, I mean, I think there's an open case for a lot of guys.
Yeah.
And I texted some people in the industry, and I got a bunch of different answers. So at that point, I don't think Adell was on the radar as much, but he's just kept doing what he was doing.
Yeah. Then we have the injured dudes, which is Victor Robles and Nick Senzel.
One of them's back.
Robles is back in rehab. And like it's like the Gleyber Torres thing. That's like a traumatic injury to the non-throwing arm again.
Yeah. I mean,
Flavor Torres sure seems to have recovered from that fine.
Right. And I am assuming, you know, I guess the question is, you know, is it going to affect his swing in any way?
And you don't know until you get I'm being a little cautious here because obviously we had him number two preseason and wrote him as an 8-7. And like before you sign back onto that, you just want to see him out in the field and doing it for a longer period of time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think that there's that much to say about Robles just because
we've written a lot about Victor Robles over the years.
We've written a lot, and also like we know about the injury, and he's just getting back on the field, so it's just a lot of known unknowns.
Like anything else. Like and Senzel, we know, is out for the season, but it's like one of those it's a torn tendon in his finger. It shouldn't be a long-term concern. He was basically major league ready when this happened.
And when you think about what he did, I mean, he also missed time because of vertigo, right?
Yeah.
And considering, I mean, and we speak to this, but considering what almost a 900 OPS.
And what is essentially a lost season, yes.
Fighting some symptoms of vertigo before he went on the DL, that should say something. I mean, this guy can really hit.
Yep.
I think if someone wanted to be higher on Senzel than 7, I don't really think I'd have an issue with it. It's just kind of where it worked out in our process.
So we finally start getting into the pitching prospects now, and I feel like we've baked in. Every year I do this, I bake more risk into all of these prospects, but it feels like especially this year, and I think generally, and partially it's a function of doing midseason lists, but looking at this, guys are injured, guys are up, look at the futures game roster, and just sort of looking at the 50 names we finally settled on, it does feel like a bit of a dip in overall talent in the minors right now.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of really interesting names that aren't on this list.
Right, so that's the other thing.
Probably wouldn't be on a 101, but are really intriguing.
But that's also like the guy. I think you look at track record so much for a lot of these lists too that, you know, your personal cheese balls, like in the good prospect sense versus the fringe prospect sense, are always more interesting to you. Like I'm obsessed right now with Carlos Guzman, who's a 20-year-old in the Tiger system, infield convert, in short season. And it's just like preternatural feel for pitching for a guy that like basically started doing it at 19. Easy arm speed, easy delivery. Like you can see him, he's projectable for start, but you can just see them ramping more out of the delivery and the body as it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like 91 to 94 already with like wiffle ball arm side, like a flash 6 change in the Penn League for a guy that's been pitching for 2 years, and like decent feel for the slider. And like there's obviously some holes here. Like he doesn't hold the stuff great. The breaking ball feel comes and goes. He's like a guy I'll want to force onto the 101 in the offseason, but you'll probably rightfully talk me out of it. But I'm like, I want to talk about this guy. I don't really want to talk about Forrest Whitley.
On the upside, you'll be able to talk about him in the Detroit top 10.
I will, absolutely, yes. He will be ranked probably like scandalously high there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and I'm talking about like my version of that might be like O'Neill Cruz, right?
Yeah.
Like maybe not a 101 guy, but maybe. But also like could be really interesting.
Sure. But he's just fun, because like Forrest Whitley, he's got like 4 above average pitches with good command.
Yeah, or GCL or AZL guys, when you're talking about like Trent DeVoe of the Angels, I mean, is like a Bahamian kid with 80, like he was an Olympic level runner.
Yeah.
With, you know, so 80 speed, or like Christian Robinson is another Bahamian kid in the AZL for the Diamondbacks with like built like a football player, probably going to stick in center, like chance to hit and hit for power. Like that's a really intriguing name. It's too far away, right? Like it's light years away, but those are some really interesting guys, but we're just not going to get to them here. And so when you look at a top 50, it feels a little light.
It's like we're ranking Mitch Keller in the top 30 in baseball for what feels like the fifth consecutive list of some sort. Like Mitch Keller. He's really good.
Do you want to talk about Willie Adames again?
Oh, God. It had to be Willie Adames. It had to be the guy that came down. Willie Adames. I guess the other big riser is the Jesus Lizard.
He's the other one.
As I said before, it's just because I didn't stuff him enough on the preseason list because I'm a coward. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, at least that's like, yeah, lefty, mid-90s, 2+ secondaries, already in AA.
And he falls right into the what we were talking about before with, like, we just want to see it confirmed, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it was like two starts in the season, and you were like, he's top 20. Like, yeah. I mean, he gives you everything you want.
Yeah. But he's still a pitching prospect.
It's going to be interesting. Did they announce who's starting for the World Team at the Futures game?
I haven't seen, like, lineups or anything.
It could be an excellent troll move to start.
The guy of the Nationals?
One of the Nats fans, yeah.
Man, him airing it out. Who's the... I'm trying to think who's the most fun, like, airing it out for one inning. Like, it's probably just Jorge Guzman.
I was going to say...
It's going to be 103. Guzman. It's just like... Yeah, there's 103. Man. Nice.
Yeah, it's probably Guzman. But I'm probably most excited to see Lizardo.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, so we skipped over, like, Sixto. I mean, is there anything... Or how concerned...
I'm always concerned when I hear elbow inflammation. Like... And I've made this comp before with him, even when we were stuffing him a ton last year. It's like, yeah, this is all great, but a lot of people... And actually, I think Sixto is a better prospect than Anderson Espinosa at similar times in their development careers.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it can go that way very easily, because, like, he doesn't look like a dude that should be doing what he's doing.
Right.
Like, you look at, like, Michael Kopech isn't a... Like, Forrest Whitley looks like a dude that should be a power arm. Like,
right, and he is.
The body. You know, even Michael Kopech, who isn't, like, you know, hugely built, looks like a guy that should be a huge...
These are Texans.
Power. Yeah, they're Texans.
This is a Texan versus Dominican conversation.
Dustin May, who we'll definitely get to, is like, those are the... You know, the pitcher frames you bet on.
Yeah.
You know, Sixto is like a Barcelona wingback. He's very athletic.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look like they do this because you're throwing 102 miles an hour. And
I'm going to start to think you have a thing for former shortstops, I'm thinking about it.
I mean, it's always tough with these kind of things, because the Phillies have used weird stuff like this to manipulate his innings before. Like, he just happened to have, like, a stiff back coming off the bus.
Yeah, but from, like, arm is a little different.
Elbow inflammation, yeah. Like, when you hear these kind of, like, rests, like, oh, he, like, tweaked an oblique, or he's got, like, a sore calf or something. So we're going to rest him for 3 weeks. And it's been more than that now. So you do just, like, if he had still been on, like, again, this is kind of baked in. If he had still been on the mound and pitching in clear water, A, he'd probably be in Reading by now. And B, he'd be 5 to 10 spots higher on this list.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know that it's like an active thing, but probably not unconscious either, that we're trying to be a little bit more moderate with arms. It's just the way things have gone in the league and in development in general. It's harder and harder to stuff arms.
I mean, it is and it isn't, because... So Jarrett and I looked at this on our podcast fairly recently, but if you look at the best pitchers in baseball right now, not a lot of them were actually... Or fewer of them were top prospects than you'd think. Like, I'm just going to pull... I just pull up our DRA leaderboards for this year. Now, Chris Sale... Sure. Chris Sale was a good prospect, but everyone thought he was a reliever.
Yeah, absolutely.
Justin Verlander, top draft pick, top tier prospect.
Yep.
Max Scherzer, great prospect. A lot of people thought he was a reliever.
Yeah, head whack is what I remember low people having to see. Yeah.
Trevor Bauer.
But also a first round pick.
Yeah. Trevor Bauer, a high first round pick, incredibly divisive as a prospect, still incredibly divisive for other reasons.
But I think we can admit he's good at what he's doing.
Sure. You know, Garrett Cole, number one overall pick, was weird as a prospect because the Pirates are bizarre in the way they develop pitchers. Jacob DeGrom, ninth round pick out of Stetson, had Stetson. Tommy John immediately.
Former shortstop,
sure. Aaron Nola, high first round pick, but seen more of a polished guy than top of the rotation guy by everyone except Jarrett Seidler, because he'll yell at me if I don't mention that.
Yeah, but also, he still hasn't thrown. What's his innings? He's
123 this year. Yeah, he's had some durability issues.
Yeah, but quality, he's still been top tier. Absolutely. And he was 170 last year, basically, so I shouldn't go. That's plenty.
Luis Severino, everyone thought was a reliever.
Reliever. Yep.
You know, Corey Kluber is basically the Jacob DeGrom story, including the same college. And then James Paxton, who, as Jared often says, people have been waiting for him to be healthy since his freshman year at Kentucky. And he might finally be. But he was also, you know, a high-level pick and good pitching prospect. But it's not
but
like
also,
the...
But, and he's an interesting one. I mean, and this may be speaking to the point. Like, he had that arm slot change, and it unlocked 3 miles per hour or more, right? I mean, that was – he's a fundamentally different guy than he was as a prospect.
I think that gets into some sort of pitcher versus position player difference. Too. Like Joe Adell was a breakout guy, but he's more or less broken out in exactly the way – like, if you really like Joe Adell going into that draft, this is like maybe 25% better than you expect him to be in his first full professional season.
But it's what you would expect.
What you would look like, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, somebody like... Sometimes it's just a simple, like, Michael Fulmer is a good example of this. You know, I saw a lot of Michael Fulmer in the minors. We ranked him as a, you know, back-end top 100 prospect after his, really his first full healthy minor league season in a couple of years, which is the year he was traded for Yoenis Cespedes at the deadline, so he split it between the Mets and the Tigers. But he was a big guy, effort in the delivery, fastball slider. Like, you just write these guys. These are the guys you put in the back end of the top 100. It was like the third starter or reliever thing. And then the Tigers just taught him a changeup grip that worked and unlocked something for him. You know, the story with Jacob DeGrom is not all that different either. You know, there's a lineage of, you know, Mets guys that have gotten the Worthen slider, and DeGrom got that too, but again, he got the Johan Santana changeup grip. And that just like unlocking that stuff and the interactions between the pitches, it's like tougher. Like, if we know suddenly Willy Adames starts hitting for, you know, 25 home run power, which, you know, guys that look like Willy Adames have done more recently, certainly.
Sure.
That's just like a thing that happens in. Like, oh, he hit for a grade more power than I expected, or 2 grades more power than I expected. You know, once these guys get a changeup jump or a command jump, the way it interacts with the rest of the skill set is just differently. It's just different.
Yeah, I was just talking about this, and it kind of came up at the BP event in Arizona, and someone asked about John Duplantier and whether he could be a top of the rotation arm. And I just said, you know, that's not really how we envision it, you know, how we've seen, you know, what he looks like right now. But and my example was Jake Odorizzi, right, who was another, you know, first round pick, big fastball, but wasn't missing bats kind of the way you would have expected because his secondaries didn't come along. Then he ends up eventually in Tampa where he learns Alex Cobb's split change grip. And all of a sudden he was missing, you know, striking out 10 per 9. Or something like that. He didn't make him an ace, but you know, he was better. Otherwise, he was probably stuck as a reliever, and he was a, you know, a number four starter or something like that. It was a big difference in the profile, and that's one of those things. Like, you can't foresee that unless it's something like, oh, he shows, you know, like of spin.
How much fucking time do we say feel for spin though? Like,
yeah, exactly. But he also needs to be in a place where someone teaches him that. Sure. It's one thing to have the feel, but you also have to have the teacher or the grip or whatever it is introduced.
And it's, again, these guys, these guys are in some ways outliers because you don't think every Tom, Dick, and Harry in Double A is like fussing around with a changeup grip. Of course they are.
Right. Right.
It's like the swing change thing. Like, we hear about the guys where the swing change has unlocked something for them, but you know, these guys, like, there's plenty of guys in Double A that are trying to lift the ball more.
Yeah. Like, right. Well, and this is also, like, I think of Hyunjin Ryu, right? When he came over, he didn't really have a curveball, and he went out and he asked Josh Beckett to show him his curveball grip and then just started throwing them in a game.
Sure.
Like, it wasn't like side sessions and he introduced it. No, he just, like, and it looked good. And, like, some guys can do that. A lot of guys can't.
Yeah. And we're not, I mean, there's a lot of things we aren't, Craig, but, like, pitching coaches are certainly not one of them.
No, absolutely not.
Like, I can watch a guy and be like, oh, like, here's a little feel for change. Like, who was I looking at? I'm like, oh, Alex Mauricio, who's a standard weirdo 27th round Yankees college find out of, like, Norfolk State. It's like an infielder. He's a two-way guy. And, like, I'm watching him pitch, and it's like 93, 94, pretty good, like 11-5, like late. I think he actually calls it a curve, but it looks like a slider. Which is my favorite thing, was sitting with a charter. Like, that's a slider. I'm like, that's not a, fine, whatever. He calls it a slider. They're all slurs at that level anyway. So, but like, and he's like trying to throw a changeup, and like the arm speed's really good. Like, the arm speed's so good, I think it's a two seamer out of the hand until I look down and it's like 88. Instead of 93 to 94, like, oh, he's got really good arm speed on it. Like, there's deception there. Like, it runs a little bit. Like, really all he needs is, like, I think he just needs a different grip. But I don't know that. But it seems like it should, like, so you can say, like, oh, he just, but it's entirely possible somebody will teach him a new changeup grip, and all of a sudden I'll check back in on him in Trenton, and it'll be, as the Yankees said, oh, like, it's 95 to 97 with 2+ secondaries now.
Right.
Because it's the Yankees. But
right.
But projecting that for, like, Mitch Keller, and I make a joke about it on the list, because, like, you know, I saw Mitch Keller last year. And was, I think he threw one changeup. It didn't matter. Because the fastball curve and command were... And he didn't even really have, like, the best feel for the curve that night. Did not matter.
Yeah.
But, like, everyone says, oh, he's got an average changeup. It flashes average. And I'm, like, trying to run it down the fall league. We're sending, like, Jack and Scott to see him just to be like, can you see? Because he threw one, and it was, like, 90 miles an hour. It looks like a two-seam fastball. Can you just, like, he's, I'm like, he wasn't really working on it. I'm like, does he have one or not? And I was talking to, like, scouts that I've seen. I'm like, have you seen, like, we see about Mitch Keller's change. Like, eh. It's, like, flash four for me. I'm like, ah.
Right. And yeah, and like, it's, like, it flash four, and there's two of them. Okay. Yeah. Well, great. I mean, effectively not there.
Yeah. And it's like, so what do you do with that? Like, we rank him 11th in baseball because he just keeps getting guys out in the upper minors. Right. And the other two pitchers are so good it might not matter, but he could also just show up with an adjust. Like, he has feel for curve, for the curveball. Everything comes out about the same.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just a grip pitch. Like, it's like the old teach a guy a cutter because you can just give him a grip pitch. And, you know, something exactly. For a guy if he doesn't really have a breaking ball. Which, you know, we hear about the guys where it works. You know, you don't hear about the guys where it doesn't.
Yeah, speaking of guys, I mean, we're talking about arms and guys where it's not really working right now. I mean, we've had a lot of internal discussions on Kopech. I know neither of us have ever been, like, his biggest fans.
No.
But it did seem like it was starting to come together.
Yeah, it's like...
At the tail end last year with a narrative. There was a narrative with it.
There's a narrative. There he is.
But that's kind of fallen apart this year. So, and we're still ranking him 15th.
The guy I always go back to, and one of my bigger regrets among my rankings at BP, and I have a few of them, God knows, is Tyler Glasnow.
You have them the second after you make them.
Yeah. Tyler Glasnow, like... I never saw him. I was like, this is the guy that's going to throw enough strikes to start.
Yeah.
And it's just like, Kopech hasn't been quite that bad. And it's not like the obvious tall pitcher problems. Mm-hmm. It's like, at some point, like, you got to throw enough strikes. Because it's for a starting pitcher, it's like just being able to stay out there long enough. Like, it's an efficiency issue. Like, Sean Newcomb finally kind of put it together this year. But A, he's left-handed.
He's definitely gone on some runs. Yeah. That's for sure.
A, he's left-handed. You know, B, it's still, like, essentially an over 10% walk rate.
Yeah.
But he misses enough bats, and he's just so freaking hard to square generally that it doesn't matter. And, like, Kopech could do that. Like, Kopech could actually come up and have, like, the, you know, 3.5 ERA, strike out an inning, walk every other inning type performance. But, you know, I've always thought he was just going to be a good closer.
And yeah, I mean, I would say, just to harp on the Newcomb thing, I understand it wasn't a direct comparison or anything like that, but I think one of the big differences was, like, everything Newcomb throws, like, has wiggle and move.
Yep.
Right? And Kopech throws hard, but it's not always...
Yeah, and it's like...
Especially at the upper end. Obviously, he can throw very hard, but at the upper end, it's straightens out.
It's like you can just... It's sort of like, what can you project? Like,
yeah,
Newcomb, literally, like, these guys, just if they never throw strikes consistently in the minors, like, what makes you think... It's not like the slider that flashes. Because it's just, you know, command is an overtime thing. I feel like...
Yeah.
Not these guys don't get, like, guys don't get command jumps. You know, going back to Jacob deGrom, that was another thing that happened with him. Yeah. Is that he went from, like, a 55 command guy to, like, a 70 command guy.
Yeah.
But he's also, like, a premium athlete. He was a shortstop. A very simple delivery. You know, Newcomb, big linebacker lefty.
Yeah.
You know, Kopech is not without effort in his delivery. Glasnow is generally a mess. So it just it just becomes tough. And, like, here's the thing, though. You know, I said this about Josh Hader before. We ranked Hader, you know, 19 preseason 2 years ago.
As a reliever, it's still worth it. I mean, 10 still.
I think we might have been low.
Yeah.
So if Kopech is, you know, if he's, I don't know, the good Dellin Betances, that's fine.
This is not a wrong ranking. Yeah, it's not
wrong. I'm fine with him being at 14.
Yeah.
And that's, like, I think you sort of said this at the outset, like, ranking pitchers now is difficult.
Yeah.
And it's not getting any easier with modern usage patterns.
I was going to say the role shift is... It might not seem that complicated, but when you're talking about a system that's built around these roles in terms of, like, how you assign value, when you say, like, well, he's not a back end, you know, he's not a back of the bullpen guy, right? Like, he's not your anchor. Like, well, that doesn't really mean anything anymore. Yeah. Neither is Josh Hader.
Right.
Like, yeah, the seventh inning guy isn't a knock. It's...
Because Hader's, like, anyway, like the end of the sixth, the seventh, and the eighth.
Right, exactly. Which is great. I mean, it's a more effective use of Josh Hader. It makes that ranking more understandable, right? But at the same time, it complicates it in other instances.
I think there's still there's this idea that you can just take a starter and, like, a number four starter and put him in the pen in a one inning or multi inning relief role, and, like, you'll just get a huge jump. And, like, you know, sometimes, you know, you're Colin McHugh and all of a sudden you post a sub one ERA and we're striking out, like, 13 per nine or whatever. But, you know, there's guys where it doesn't work, but you don't hear about them because the relief conversion fails and they're DFA'd.
Yeah. I mean, I think Kopech is still, like you said, I think,
it's
there's
fine.
A very good chance he's,
like,
a really
fine.
Good believer. But six per nine is not... And again, the narrative last year was that he had dialed back on his velocity and it was giving him more command and control. And I, like, if that's the case and he was able to do that, like, where is that this year?
Yeah.
I don't know. Is there anyone else you want to?
Since we spent 40 minutes on the first 15 guys on the list. After I said this would be a half hour. Yeah.
When have we ever done time right?
I guess we can talk about sort of like the next tier of shortstops, which are Royce Lewis, Brendan Rodgers, and Carter Kieboom.
Uh-huh.
Because the only thing we like more than toolsy center field types are toolsy shortstop types, although none of these three guys might actually be shortstops in the majors.
Yeah.
In fact, I said...
Although, that. Yeah. The fallback for... And I think one of the reasons Lewis might rank above the other ones, the fallback for him is still up the middle.
Yeah.
I think center field makes the most sense if he's not a shortstop.
Rodgers just... And I've seen...
Yeah.
So much Brendan Rodgers. Like, a lot of Brendan Rodgers.
Yeah, I think the stat you have in his why he might fail is worth bringing up.
And it's not even that, because I guess I saw him in New Hampshire too, but I've only seen him at home for the most part.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's not even the, whatever, it's a half season of home road splits, but yeah, he has a sub 300 OBP away from the band box in downtown Hartford, but it's just, you watch the swing against like double A velocity and double A brains, like, it just doesn't look right. Like, the bottom line numbers are there, and he's shown good for me here and there in games. It's just like, it just doesn't, like, it doesn't pop in the way you would think for a top 20 prospect. But, like, everyone I talk to that sees him, like, writes him up as a six. It's like,
yeah.
And at a certain point, it's just like, and, you know, people whose opinions I trust, like, yeah, he's a six. Like, it's not like, even they're like, yeah, I get where you're coming from, and I get, but it's a six. I'm like, okay.
Like, well, what do I do also, with this? Also, like, sometimes, you know, obviously we talk a lot and you've seen him a bunch, so we've talked about him, and then, like, you know, when he's either away or a game that you haven't seen, and it's like I see a highlight where it's him putting one almost out of the park.
Oh yeah, I know. Well, he's, you know, not like premium,
he just, he does, he's got good bat speed, like, it's like, oh, plus raw, right.
And yeah, no, that it's in there, it's all in there, it's just never like, and he's still relatively young for double A. One of those guys, it's good, it's almost a guy that I've seen like too much.
Is it prospect fatigue?
It's not prospect fatigue,
it's Brendan Rodgers fatigue.
It's specifically Brendan Rodgers fatigue, because I just like like I keep just like waiting for him to, I keep waiting for it to click, because I have this idea of what it should be in my mind, because, you know, like top 20 prospect in baseball, shortstop in double A, like that's a thing. There's a mental checklist you go through for that guy. And it just, he doesn't check the boxes.
Well, and going back to the article that you wrote early in the year, that was him and Garrett Hampson, right? Yeah. You talk glowingly about Hampson and more negatively about Rodgers, but I think there's a decent chance, obviously, that Rodgers is the better.
Oh, absolutely. And Hampson's just the guy that, like, he's the classic example of that. It's not even that. It's classic example of the dude you fall in love with, and at the end of the day, you write him as a 45.
Right.
But he's, like, well, great. Like, it's just fun to watch.
Well, but what I was going to say was, like, he was 23, right? Yeah.
Yep.
So what is 3 years at the same level? And I know you know this, but this is but it's a hard thing to balance, right? Like, you see what the two of them look like. On right. the same yep. field together, yep. playing in the same position at different times, right?
Yep.
Like,
yep. Absolutely.
They'll flip back and forth, so you know what they look like right next to each other. And but the question is, like, if you give two more years to Brendan Rodgers at Double A, what does that look like all of a sudden?
Yeah, but I mean, it's not like, so you get into like the repeating a level. It's Hampson's gone level by level when he's hit everywhere he's gone.
Yeah,
it's just like, what, like, is Rodgers fixing the swing issues? That's what it is. It's not like,
yeah,
like he has a little, he gets a little hitchy, gets a little long, and he chases down and away too much. Like, is he fixing that? That's it. If he fixes that, then yeah, absolutely, he's a six.
Right.
And like, look, Hampson has his own, like, Hampson has a crazy pre-sway. He's much noisier than Rodgers is. But the difference is, you know, he'll grind out at bats, and he just squares everything. And it looks like the pre-swing looks terrible. Not terrible, that's unfair. But it's like, you know, big leg kick, handsy, but just everything square, square. You know, gap to gap, everything. Seven runner, dirty uniform guy, better shortstop than Rodgers is.
But yeah, I mean, Garrett Hampson isn't on this list. Right. Would I be incredibly shocked if Hampson had a better major league career? No. I would not. But, I mean, it's like, the way he's going to get to that better major league career is, you know, 8 to 10 years of, like, 5 as a regular and Rodgers just busts. Yes. Like, the upside of Rodgers
is... It's like grinding it out.
Yeah.
And then there's Carter Kubun.
Sure.
Who I just saw... I mean, we've been big fans of him, I mean, really since the draft. I thought it was a really nice get at 28th overall.
I mean, he would have probably been here or thereabouts preseason if he hadn't gotten hurt last year.
This is correct.
I mean, see it again.
Yeah. And that's to go back to his fellow Nationals prospect and guy who started the year at low A, Juan Soto, was also the only reason he wasn't higher than he was injuries. Yeah. But Kubun, I mean, might not be a shortstop, but the reports have been better there this year. I just saw him for a game. I mean, I told you this. He didn't really get an opportunity to show one way or the other. It looked fine. But probably has the bat for third if it comes to that, and is not like someone else slightly down the list where I don't think third's going to be a problem for him.
Talking about Ryan Mountcastle.
I am talking about Ryan Mountcastle, who I've probably made this joke 3 times over various lists, but when you talk about his defense, he's a really good hitter.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's really what it comes down to. But Kubun adds value in the field, whether it's at third or short, and I think has a chance to stay at short, and if he does, the bat's going to be really good there.
So since you can finally eat dinner and I can deal with my whiny dogs, of the rest of the list, who's a guy that you think could jump between now and our 2019 101, which I don't even want to start thinking about, but we'll probably start thinking about in about 6 weeks.
I'll pick a personal cheese ball because I had to fight to get him on the list. Bruce Dark Gratterall.
Oh my God. All right.
What do you want?
It's fine. It's fine.
He's
a short righty.
Upper 90s.
Yeah. He's fine.
He's 6'1". It's not that short, though. It's not that short. He's upper 90s. Sometimes will tire, drop down to 96 in the middle innings, God forbid. It's still pretty good. Has some movement to the fastball, and the 3 secondaries. So he's already at 4 pitches at 19 years old. He's up in high A. He's been hit around his first 2 starts in high A, but he was really good in low A early in the year. And I mean, just everything from what I've heard, I asked about how he looks compared to last year when he was in Elizabethton. Everything I heard was that, you know, the secondaries are coming along and they all flash above average, and that's 3 of them. And the control is there. He doesn't walk the house or anything like that. I mean, I understand he's short and he's, you know, an easy guy to put in the reliever bin, but he's not that short at 6'1". And I don't know, that's 4 really good pitches. I don't know. I think probably not talked about enough.
Probably not. I am unsurprisingly going to triple down, I think, at this point. Triple down on the ginger guard.
Yeah, well, I was gonna say I almost picked him, so because we mentioned,
because we already like aggressively ranked him at midseason, so it's like how much higher can you really get? But
no, I think he'd be higher. I think he'd be in that tier of pitchers we were talking about before.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to talk about guys that have a mostly theoretical changeup, he fits in that.
Yeah,
that makes Keller bin.
Yeah,
but it's just like, and this has been true since he was drafted. It's, you know, I know that it feels like 50 tall, projectable Texans get drafted like in the 2nd to 5th round every year in the draft. But it was just something about May from the beginning where the stuff was like, you could just see it coming together, and it just had like the everything looked right going for him. Now he's like shoving in Rancho Cucamonga, which is an incredibly difficult place to pitch.
Yeah, and it's
also... I should caveat this. This only applies if he doesn't get traded to the Orioles before the... and it's all out the window.
Although his hair with that uniform...
Oh, yeah, it's a great aesthetic, but you'll actually never see him in that uniform because we'll immediately...
The Bowie uniform is not dissimilar, so I might
follow him. Sure.
The only other thing I can add to that, and I know we've talked about this, but out of the draft, he was both a scouting guy and a stats guy. Yeah. You know, the spin numbers that he has are insane. And like I know even now, like the spin rate on his curveball is higher than Seth Lugo's were. You know. And it also looks like a good curveball. So it's one of those things that the analytics guys and the scouts are basically in agreement on him, which is always nice. So you got your beer and your tacos.
I want to wrap things up with, because I want to talk about them specifically, I'm guessing, and I'm always wrong about this, and I'm sure both the comments under the list and my chat tomorrow will put the lie to this statement, but who I think are probably the two most controversial rankings on the list.
Okay.
That'd be first Salim Matias at 41.
Yeah.
And I know
we're a little alone on him.
And Hunter Green at 45.
Mm-hmm.
I'll start with Matias. And dude's going to hit 50 home runs in the Sally League as a 19-year-old.
That's messed up.
It's pretty fucked up, Craig.
Yeah.
Fucked up.
No, it's...
I mean, the thing is, like, normally those guys would get promoted out of there at midseason, but he also has, like, a 290 on base percentage, just striking out 37% of the time.
Yeah, I mean, the strikeouts are a concern. Like, he's a fully formed three true outcomes guy at 19, which is, you know...
It's like he's also athletic enough that it's not like it's a... Like, the swing doesn't look like a dude that should be that kind of player, necessarily. Like, look, I don't think he's going to win a batting title by any stretch of the imagination, but...
But it's also, it's 70 raw.
Yeah,
He's athletic. And he's got a plus arm, too. Yeah. Like, there's value there as well.
Yeah, it's very much
so a... he's not a defensive zero. He's not, like, the three true outcome guy that adds, not, you know, that's Jack Cust or whatever.
And, like, I guess my one concern would be, if you're the dude that's going to hit 50 home runs in the Sally League, like, you should probably be walking more than that, because, like, nobody should be pitching to you at that point.
They shouldn't be throwing to you, yeah.
Anywhere near the zone. So what are you actually swinging at, buddy?
Yeah.
But it's just, like, it's too much, like, for me not to stuff him a little bit. And, like, Hunter Green, obviously, was a guy that had 1-1 buzz last year pre-draft, and has
easily could have gone 1-1.
Has seems like started to put it together a little bit more on the mound in the Midwest. So, you know, the guy with like premium athleticism.
Mm-hmm. Former shortstop.
Yeah. You know, easy. If you can call a 100-mile-an-hour fastball easy, it's an easy 100. It's just like, for me, now that he's solely a pitching, you know, he's only a pitching prospect, like, what are the other major league pitches?
Yeah, I mean, he's like a little bit like the classic 1.5 pitches guy.
Yeah.
Or was, you know, at the beginning of the year. I mean, I will say it's encouraging he doesn't, you know, the control is pretty good. Obviously, I don't think that's a huge surprise given the athleticism, right? The repeatability of his mechanics. That all makes sense, but I don't think it's there's a consistent second pitch right now, which, granted, he's in low A. It doesn't have to be super consistent, but, you know, it's hard to see the third or beyond that, right?
Yeah. And it's just like, again, he's still 18. Obviously, the ceiling here is huge, but it's like, you know, comparing him to sort of the guys around him on this list. You know, Griffin Canning is, when not seriously injured or otherwise compromised, which he's been a lot, is basically a fully formed Major League arsenal.
Yep.
You know, Gratterall, as you said, already flashes pretty good secondaries. You know, Michael Baez already has, you know, what looks like a Major League quality changeup.
Right. There are two. I mean, Baez has questions about his third pitch, you know, himself. Yeah. But there are two almost fully formed pitches there.
Yeah. So it's just like, you know, he might just be a breakout guy where stuff starts to come together in the second half of the season in the Midwest League, and he shows, you know, that front of the rotation upside, and he jumps 20 spots. That's fine. I just think at present, I think too much got, because he had the two-way thing, like if he had just been a right-handed prep arm, I think the conversation around him as a draft pick would have been a little bit different. Like, he obviously still would have been a first-round pick.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think there was actual noise of him having value two ways. I think more probably in the public sphere than within the game. But you know, there was certainly things that were being said where, you know, him and Makai could both get developed as two way guys.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder. You know, I kind of think, and I know we got a lot of conversation out of it and a lot of feedback on it. But like when we. You know, Jorge Guzman, we brought up in the futures game context, but yeah. Like our assessment and what we had heard, and obviously we heard otherwise later, but like he was a big fastball with not a ton else.
He still pretty much is.
And he still, well, and I was going to say, like, again, like we got a lot of response to that, but like he's now in high A because he's 22 already. So they skipped him over low A and he's not missing the bats that he was. He doesn't put the ball on the ground like he was, and he's walking a lot of guys.
Yep.
So there's volatility in that profile. I mean, it can certainly explode, but you kind of have to see it before getting ahead of yourself, I think.
I agree with that, Craig.
So does your dog.
Yeah, I gotta go deal with the dogs. We've already done an hour on this. Of course, if you have any other questions, you can put them in the comments of our midseason 50. Craig and I will both be around to answer them. And I'll be doing a chat at 3 p.m. at Baseball Perspectives, which you may or may not have already happened by the time you're listening to this. But thanks for listening, and I'm sure we'll do it again when it comes to the 101 time, because people love lists. Yes.
People love lists. Well, we got 30 in the off season too.
So. Yeah, looking forward to that.